Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Interesting episode of Dynamite. Unfortunately, not as nearly as many people as they would have liked to have believed saw it, at least not on Wednesday. Les and I were discussing off the air the importance of those, I believe they call them plus seven numbers, folks who are watching it on DVR. And Dynamite does do very well with that, so we should point that out in fairness when we talk about those ratings. Since it's on my mind, I figured I would get that out, Les, because these days, at least five times a day, I pick up my phone to do something and don't remember what it's for or why I picked it up. I walk into a room and I think, what was I coming here for? I have no idea why I'm here. And I saw something the other day that said that specifically when you walk into a room, that your brain processes that as a completely new event. So it kind of wipes that short-term memory slate clean, which is why people tend to forget what they came into a room for as soon as they walk in and look around and think to themselves, I have no idea what I'm doing here.
I'm just going to say to you, welcome to my world.
Yeah, exactly.
that's a normal part. It's been that way for a while. Lord, yes. Lord, yes. I did want to say on a positive note before we get into anything else, I filled up with gas this morning at only $2.79 a gallon.
Oh, I'm so jealous right now.
I knew you would be.
That's why you said it, you bastard.
Oh, you know, and we're not going to, we might get it. I'm not going to buy a subscription to the Apple, network or whatever the hell it is. But the Monster Factories, I guess it's a series that's going to run on there?
There is, yeah. I don't know if the entire season is already up, but I do know that multiple episodes are up on Apple TV Plus right now. So, yeah, if you have Apple TV Plus.
I've seen the clips, you know, and it should, you know what, it should be interesting. Now, a bunch of the kids on the clip, the only one, the kid that's nicknamed Twitch, I saw him on there, and I love that. I mean, this kid is never, I shouldn't say that. I might be made wrong. I don't believe he's ever got a shot at working with other big companies. You know, I mean, it just doesn't. But I had mentioned, I wrote something on there. I said, you know, I haven't seen the show. I'm sure it'll be interesting. But the only character, the only person I recognized was Twitch. And I've done four weekend training camps there. And he's been at every one of them. And I will say, this kid works his ass off. He's got drive, determination, and just he kills it. He does. And honestly, a lot more heart than some of the guys who are athletically, you know, more developed than he is, or that may think that they're going to be stars before he. But
it is worth,
hell of a kid.
Yeah, worth pointing out too, if you're not really familiar with the Monster Factory, or you happen to cross Apple TV Plus and you're like, okay, it's wrestling, it's interesting, but I don't really know what this is about. Part of the reason Les only recognizes Twitch on that show so far is because so many people from the Monster Factory that you worked with over those four camps are either working on Monday and Friday or on Wednesdays.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Well, a guy named Luis Martinez.
That's right.
Happens to be in WWE. A lot of people wouldn't know that name, but he has another name now, and it is Damian Priest.
Priest?
But and he's a good guy. I really like him. But yeah, there's quite a few guys. And of course, going back before Danny Cage had the Monster Factory, it was started by Larry Sharp. But Larry also, Buddy Rogers, kicked in a few verbal lessons with guys there as well. But that's where, who all's come out of there?
Bam Bigelow was the prize graduate many years.
Yes, and Sheamus
was
out of there.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a bunch more. We just don't have a list of them. But the reason I brought it up is I think it'll be interesting to watch. So if anybody listening to us, has has bought into that pay channel, I'd say use your money. Watch this because it should be pretty good. I think it's a hell of a facility. That's for sure. You've been there before. Right?
I have a couple of times for your camps. Yeah.
Yeah, where else can you go to find the floor with Matt wrestling mat on it wall to wall, for Christ's sake.
That's right. Yeah, that's true.
And a complete weight room.
Yeah.
And everything. And I don't know if it'll be mentioned in this show or not, but there the amateur coach and the amateur wrestlers from that building are storied, man, from winning tournaments and all that. So yeah, so it should be interesting and pretty much a fun thing to pay attention to and to watch.
I hope that's something else that they actually mention on the show, that they share space in the Monster Factory with a pretty accomplished amateur wrestling program too. So it's full service, really. I mean, as a kid, you go from amateur there to pro. Yeah.
Sure. And I know with the amateur, some of I've been told there by guys that there are fathers that bring their, you know, will drive in that don't live in the area from with their sons to, if they're going to be amateur wrestlers, to train under that coach. I've met him. I can't think of his name to save my life. But anyway, yeah, I think it's well worth the fans watching if they get the opportunity. And so, anyway, where do we start the rest of this week? Do we talk about what?
Well, before we get into AEW or WWE, I want to point out that noted internet hawk Les Thatcher was clearly scouring the net for this info. I'm out of the loop this week. But apparently Ric Flair and Dutch Mantel got into a verbal exchange or two between their podcasts and such. So please educate me on this, Les. What's going on between Flair and why do we have two of our favorites fighting?
I don't know why they do this. I hate to see this. As I told you before we started recording, like when Flair and Bret Hart were at each other, or Flair and Mick Foley. I don't know why Rick takes all this stuff public anyway. I just hate to see it with the guys, you know. And with these two guys, too, I've had the opportunity to work with both of them. I know them both pretty damn well. They both have storied careers. They both have contributed a whole bunch to this. Has Flair made more money than Dutch? Of course, yes. Well, Rick's made more money a lot and spent more than a lot of us, too. But, the whole thing was that I guess on his podcast, Dutch was asked his opinion of Rick's last match. And Dutch was honest. Do I need to say more than he was honest?
No, absolutely not.
And Rick wasn't happy with his honesty. So Rick went to rip on him, you know, basically, what have you done? What have you made? And this and that. And now, like I say, I haven't read every transcript of every podcast or every email message they've sent back and forth. But, Dutch says, hey, you know, Dutch has got a great sense of humor to start with. But he said, you know, I guess I should thank you. You've made me relevant on social media. I'm a lot higher profile than I would have been otherwise. But he goes ahead and says, you know, what he thinks. And he said, you know what, you're trying to degrade me or just, you know, make me seem small. I have never owed the IRS six figures plus. I've never had to borrow that kind of money and not paid anybody back. And, you know, and I've never done this. And it's just, and the crazy thing is, you know, Rick gets off on and goes crazy. And Dutch is just stating facts for the most part in his opinion, and he says that. But I hate to see it. Both these guys are high profile, and I have respect for both of them. I wish Rick would come off of that. And, you know, listen, can we all burn bridges in this? I mean, can I fill your head with guys that I would just soon shoot as talk about over the last 62 plus years? Hell, we could fill a couple hours with that, but I'm not going to. It's over and done with, you know. I don't know. And I think the sad thing with what bothers me with Rick, would I like to relive my past glories for whatever value they are? Sure, I would. Wouldn't everybody? But we can't. And Rick, God bless him, can't either. And I hate that it's come to this. Dutch tells some great stories, by the way. I don't know if anybody catches him on Facebook. I haven't heard his podcast, but he gets in his, he writes some very long stories, and they're good stories on Facebook. And like I say, he's got a great sense of humor. But I wanted to mention that to you, and I was surprised that you hadn't seen somebody, you know, remark on it in some way, shape, or form.
I have.
Are you just out of the loop there, Victor?
I am completely out of the loop there. I do want to answer one more address one more housekeeping item, which is a question we got on the board this week, asking why does it take a few and sometimes several hours for your show to be listed on the front page, along with the other podcasts? And I wish I had a better answer for you, but I do want to answer your question as best I can. And the reason for that is, I don't know. It's really out of my hands. See, before they did the site overhaul a few years ago, everybody who hosted a podcast was in charge of posting that show to the site. So as soon as Les and I had recorded, I'd done a little editing, some audio sweetening, yada, yada, I'd post it to the site and it'd be on the front page as soon as I hit the button. When the site was overhauled a while back, they basically took that out of the hands of the folks who create the podcasts, I would imagine, with the exception of Brian, right? But so what happens is you go through the back end of the site and you get everything prepared and you click a button that says ready for edit. So there's supposed to be someone working the back end of the site daily, and that person catches whether it's an article or a podcast, because everything that goes on the site goes through this now. And it's supposed to sort of double check and make sure everything is in order before it's posted. So once I click the ready for edit button, it's out of my hands. I have no idea if that person is there, if they've got errands to run, if there was an emergency, God forbid. So I cannot tell you what the reason is on a week-to-week basis why sometimes it goes up almost immediately after I've turned it in, or why sometimes it takes a few hours. Once I put it there on the back end of the site, it's now out of my hands as opposed to the way that it used to be.
So they need to write en masse to somebody else. You know, my answer to that, because, you know, I've had a couple people just ask me that, right? But I know that this was posted on the board because I can't talk. My cut and paste guy had sent me a note telling me that. He said, you know the answer. I said, I absolutely don't. But I said, I told him, I said, I'll tell you what I told a couple people that asked me. I said, I think we are looked at as preliminary guys on that site. And since we aren't on masthead or major players, or we don't share a podcast with the major players, then we get up there when they damn well get around to it. I don't know. But we shall persevere. And you know what? I'm sure you wonder. And I've sent you an email a couple of times saying,
yeah,
you know, like I would click on the site, say at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we normally today we're recording later, but normally we start recording around between 10 and 10:30 in the morning. And I said, why are we up? You say, I don't know. So we're as clueless as the folks asking. So. But maybe it'll be resolved by us bringing it up. I don't know.
Yeah.
So should we talk about wrestling, you think?
I guess we'll have to get there eventually, won't we? Or would you rather talk about the brackets first? Is your bracket already busted?
I don't even know yet. I haven't had it. I never pick a bracket. I've watched so many March Madness basketball games. I did see that Furman won, though.
Oh, I had them. They're in my bracket.
Cool. They're right down, you know, they're over it's a small college down in South Carolina. I was trying to think, there was a scoring champion that came out of there back when I was a teenager. And I came out of Furman, and they, I don't know if they won a national championship, but they have been nationally recognized during that time too. But I can't think of the guy. He was a guard. He was a shooter, obviously, because it was about his scoring. But at that point, Furman was.
When you were coming up, Frank Selvey?
Selvey, there you go.
Yep.
He played for the Hawks, I think, or?
Let me click
this
article.
He played pro ball for somebody.
Let's see. Frank Selvey, 6'3 guard, played for the Lakers, the Bucks, Minnesota. That's also the Lakers. The Knicks.
Yeah.
Looks like, who is that? ST, is that St. No, Syracuse. I guess that's St. Louis Hawks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Atlanta. You're right. Same team.
Yeah. Did it say anything about the year that he was there, Selby?
The years he was there. He was drafted in 1954. So I guess, what, 50 to 54 or 51 to 54?
I'd say, yeah. I'd say so, yeah. But, and it goes that far back. But like I say, as a kid that started playing basketball in the fifth grade, you know, loves the sport. I remember that when I saw Furman had made the cut to make the 68, I thought, damn, they haven't been around for a while, but I didn't realize it was that far back. But yeah, yeah, they were nationally recognized back then too. It, you know, there's always some great stories in the March Madness, aren't there?
Oh, there are a ton of great stories. There's always that one or two teams. I was hoping Charleston would be that story again, as they have been in previous years. I had them in my bracket, and unfortunately they lost last night. But I think everybody's bracket was broken with Princeton and Arizona yesterday. So, I mean, they basically blew up my region.
Well, don't you – I mean, here's the thing. This year, how many teams have been placed in the number one slot?
Oh, can't hold it.
No. I mean, it's what, 7-8 teams have been in that slot over the season.
Easy, yeah.
So, yeah. So, it I think this will be interesting, though. But I was going to say about these upsets that, you know, garnered so much attention from basketball fans and so much press. Honestly, that's what we always try to, you know, create in the wrestling business, or we used to. I don't – it still pops up there occasionally, but not as – often as it should, I would like to see it.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I think, you know, especially my age, the one upset you can think about that essentially put someone on the map, even though he had been quite accomplished in other much smaller promotions a few years prior, was X-Pac, 1-2-3 Kid over Razor Ramon on Monday Night Raw. That's I can't think of a bigger upset that really cemented someone as a star for a decade plus to come. And because of what you were just saying, he popped into my head, but also the thought to ask you if you can remember any other similar upsets maybe when you were making your way through the territories.
You know, well, yeah, I can. Trying to think who was the heel. I know. In Atlanta, Bobby Shane was one of the top heels. And so anyway, whoever was supposed to wrestle him that night had transportation problems or something. Actually, I don't know if anybody was supposed to. It was probably just part of the angle. But anyway, they brought several wrestlers out to the ring for Shane to pick an opponent. And in that mix was Ricky Gibson, Robert Gibson's older brother, who was one hell of a worker himself, believe me. Maybe even a notch or so above his younger brother. But anyway, he was fresh-faced. Nobody knew who he was. And so Shane is, you know, looking at all these guys. And, of course, the remainder of the guys he had to pick from were all known to the fans in Atlanta and, you know, had seen them wrestle numerous times. But anyway, Shane makes it a point on who am I going to pick? Like, you know, and he makes a point of saying, who's this kid? He's just getting started, that sort of thing. I'll take him. So he picks Ricky Gibson. And, of course, the audience thinks, okay, the poor kid. And he puts Ricky over. So that made Ricky right there in Atlanta in one full swoop. So I'm sure there's been a couple more, too. And there should be more today. Well, you know, another modern one you mentioned about Sean Waltman, X-Pac, how about the first time Cena stepped in a ring with Angle?
That's true. Now he lost that match. But nevertheless, when that match was over, there was a star. Everybody knew it. Now,
yes, he was made. Yeah,
he was made. I mean, they nearly fumbled the bag with him after that, but he made an impression, and you believed he was going somewhere. Believe it or not, it actually took Stephanie McMahon to save his career, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so this is not something new in our business, but it should. I think it needs to be utilized more often. You know, again, it comes back. When we were talking about the March Madness and those upsets, I was thinking, what did my favorite Booker say?
Oh, give them what they want, just not when they expect it.
Exactly, and that's what's happening in the tournament, right?
For sure.
Or how about when North Carolina State Can you see Valvano still running around the court like a crazy man?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, gosh, in the eight, between that one and Villanova over Georgetown.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
You know what? I do have one other from the territory era that just came to mind. You tell me if you'd heard about this in the locker rooms and thought to yourself, wow, what happened there? When Los Angeles was a hot popping territory weekly at the Olympic, their big champion at this particular time was the Big Cat, Ernie Ladd. And he dropped their title to Chavo Guerrero and really made the Guerrero family in the process in that market.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and of course, what you just said in that market, and of course, there's a great Hispanic population in Los Angeles and the areas where that television went as well. So, yeah, it was a smart move in that respect. And Ernie was not adverse to putting somebody over if he thought it would do business. And obviously that one did business and continued to do it through Chavo Jr. and Hector and on and on and on. But yeah, yeah. So yeah. And I'd like to see more of it. And I don't know. It's just, you know what I was thinking too here the other day, and this has got nothing to do with what we may talk about. It's happened in the past week, but our commentators don't come into play in helping to get a storyline, an angle, or a situation over as much as they used to when I was, you know, even JR 15, 20 years ago. Now you hear the announcers, but they don't hype the storylines as strong and spend time helping talk about them and develop them as they used to. Do you think?
No, I completely agree. But let me ask you this. How much of that do you think is because the guy on the inside is no longer sitting at the booth? I mean, for years, Vince was in people's ears, and I assume Tony is today, too. But it's different when a guy like Bill Watts is at the commentary table for Mid-South or, you know, basically someone who's got their hand in the booking and the promotion has got the microphone like Vince did for so many years on Raw. He couldn't call a match to save his life, but he could absolutely tell you the story forwards and backwards because he either wrote it or approved of it. And it brings right. a whole different perspective to it when you've got someone who's intimately involved in crafting everything you're seeing on television. You know, they help paint that picture because it's their picture and they want it to be as beautiful as possible.
Yeah, I'm going to mention something that I saw on Twitter just, I don't know how many weeks ago, maybe a month ago. I don't even know. It don't matter. But it was one of the nicest compliments I've ever had. And it would add to this, and the guy making the compliment, everyone's going to know. And it would also add to this type of story. And that was someone, I don't know how it came up because I didn't see the start of the thread. But someone had finally gotten around to, I guess, had asked Dave Meltzer about me as a commentator.
Oh, okay.
And I can't quote it verbatim, but anyway, his answer was, you know, similar. Well, I liked him. He took his time to explain what was going on in the ring to the fans. I didn't talk down to the fans. And he said, I looked at him as being like Gordon Solie with a wrestler's mind. And I thought, Jesus, I need to buy Dave a steak dinner some fucking place. Right? And I've never had but Dave, if you happen to hear this or if any of your stooges hear it, please convey it to him. And I'm saying thank you. But I was a hell of a compliment to say I was Gordon Solie only with a wrestler's mindset.
Well,
and he's right. I did try to, you know, in some detail to explain what's going on in the ring. But, you know, here's another thing. Only there's certain matches that I don't give a damn who it is on the mic is but be capable of doing today because we had the time because guys worked holds back then. And now, if they're running 100 miles an hour, it's hard to take that. Oh, he did, and then he did, and then he did, and then he did, and then the other guy did, you know, and it becomes more difficult. But I think, here again, the owner, the booker, the promoter, whoever's in charge, has the option of slowing that down in the ring as well, and giving your commentators a chance to help build the story and you know, make it more solid and hopefully believable. Am I making sense with that? I think so.
You are, and I know everybody has noted this, so it's not breaking news, but it's been pointed out. The moment Vince left the producer's position backstage, Michael Cole improved tenfold because he didn't have somebody shouting at him for two straight hours or three straight hours at a pay-per-view and was able to do more of what he sees. But even then, you know, there are certainly things you can clean up no matter how long you've been doing this. And it's also the way, again, you know, just because Vince isn't in his ear doesn't mean there's not someone wearing that headset back there. So, you know, the onus is as much on the person wearing the headset in the back as it is the commentator, because like you said, more often than not, it's the promoter, and the promoter has the option or the opportunity to make these guys slow down, to give the space and let people breathe and hear the story. I know these days we've got a lot about in Major League Baseball about the pitch clock and speeding up the game, and games are boring these days. And I agree with you, as much as a baseball fan as I am, and I'm a huge baseball fan. The games have gotten too long. Everything takes forever. The shift, the intentional, all that stuff. But one of the joys of being at of watching a baseball game or listening to one on the radio a generation or two ago was the fact that even though the game wasn't overly long, there was an opportunity between pitches to tell stories and share information about the other players and talk about things that had absolutely nothing to do with baseball, but were extremely entertaining. And you felt like you were just hanging out in somebody's living room. And the opportunity to expand on things in wrestling is gone because, in large part, really because of the faster pace everyone moves at.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, and I have said this on here before, but it's been a long time ago. Wade Hoyt, who was a pitcher with the historically great 1927 Yankees of Ruth and Garrick and Lazare and so forth and so on, he was the baseball broadcaster for Cincinnati Reds when I was a kid. And he always, you know, added stories and descriptive and this and that. And of course, when you're listening to road games, and then I found out that only once in the year, I realize this is back in the 40s and early 50s, at once a year, Wade Hoyt traveled with the team on a road tour. But the rest of the time, he was calling a road game over, he was getting off of ticker tape or radio, you know, whatever, fed, ball, strike, you know, what's going on. But he was drawing his picture, talking about the lights, the grass. And I thought, son of a bitch, right? Because he wasn't there. He was just recalling what it was like for him maybe to play in that particular ballpark, you know. But it was so descriptive, you thought he was sitting, you know, in the broadcast booth right above the field. And again, you don't have that opportunity any longer. The broadcaster just passed away, the catcher for the Cardinals.
Tim McCarver.
Tim McCarver. He was a hell of a broadcaster.
He was great.
Yeah. And of course, if you're a Dodger fan wherever to wherever, from Brooklyn to Los Angeles, who the hell was the man there?
But what a legacy, right? To go from Red Barber to Vin Scully.
Oh yeah, yes, absolutely, yes, absolutely, and again, you still have, you know, well, doing that obviously because you know, it is obviously a little bit slower game, but and of course maybe too slow for everybody this time in our lives. But, yeah, I would love to see, you know, because I was thinking about this the other day, and when I see a hot angle, the commentators have something to say, but it's not, I mean, they're covering it and they're excited about it, but it's not necessarily that they're feeding you information to enhance that angle. Does that make sense?
Yes. They're more calling what they're seeing as opposed to maybe explaining the ramifications behind it or something that led to it.
Right, or how it got there. Right,
yes,
exactly. Yeah. You know, I remember seeing so-and-so when he was a tag team partner with so-and-so, and I knew they had problems, but obviously, that sort of thing. It's a whole different ball game now. And in those respects, I don't think it should be. I think those things enhanced what you were trying to sell to the audience. So anyway, we're talking about history and stuff. I don't know, should we talk about anything current or something?
Well, we can do that while staying with history. Let's jump into WWE, because there's been a couple of announcements regarding who's getting inducted into the class of 2023 Hall of Fame for WWE. The Great Muta, second confirmed inductee, is going to be inducted by Ric Flair. Obviously, a lot of history there between Flair and Muta, and not just in WCW. On Flair's many trips to New Japan Pro Wrestling after the relationship between the NWA and All Japan came to an end, he wrestled Muta, or as he was known also without the Muta gimmick, Keiji Muto, tons of times, probably hundreds in all honesty. And the kind of star, you know, for folks who never saw Muta in America, I mean, he was a revelation, because he brought a whole different level of athleticism, still had great size, knew how to actually wrestle, and not just fly around, but he could do both, and he knew when to do both, even as a young guy, because he was in America, as most of the time with Japanese wrestlers, they come here on what's called learning excursions. You know, they'll stay for a year or two, and at that time work in different territories, and after they'd gotten some seasoning, they would come back to Japan with a push. And it's real interesting about Muta, though, Les, and you recall this, I'm sure. He was not really keen on going back to Japan initially. Like, once he got out to America, he wanted to stay here and would have stayed longer. In fact, fought to stay longer with New Japan management. But what happened at that Starrcade, where they, for some reason, after he had been practically undefeated for a long, long while, they beat him three times in the same night. And after that, he thought, you know what? New Japan doesn't sound too bad.
I'm going home.
Yeah, right? I'm going home.
Yeah. He's deserving. There's no two ways about it. He is most certainly. And of course, we've heard about Ray Ray, and those who listen to us realize that I'm not critical of it. I don't believe in putting someone in the Hall of Fame while they're still taking bumps, which is, you know, the Observer Hall of Fame has a lot of guys who are a hell of a lot younger than Ray, for Christ's sake. And I'm not saying that they're not future Hall of Famers. They're not my Hall of Famers today. But with Ray, as I told you before we started recording, I don't necessarily think it's, you know, I don't know of anybody else that act well. I guess Undertaker, but he always came back as active. But Ray basically is the face of lucha wrestling in this country. And when I say that, yes, there were a lot of other luchadors that came on the scene around, you know, but I think every wrestling fan, when you say lucha, Rey Mysterio's name comes up, don't you?
Completely agree. And Conan is going to be inducting him, because Conan is the guy who opened so many doors for Rey, quiet as it's kept. You'll probably hear a little more about that during the Hall of Fame weekend in those ceremonies, because Conan was the guy who convinced Antonio Pena not only to take him into AAA, but if you're a fan of lucha, you know that they had minis, and still do occasionally have minis divisions in Mexican companies. They had one in AAA and had one in CMLL at the time. And Antonio Pena was going to bring in Ray after Conan wore him down as a mini. And it was Conan who had to go back to the office and say, dude, you don't understand. You cannot put him in the minis division. I mean, imagine the Ray you see today, 30 pounds lighter, and as a teenager. And so I understand what Pena was thinking. I'm like, listen, my top star is dying to get this guy in here. I'll do him a favor. Put him in the minis division. Move on, blah, blah, blah. But Conan knew what everybody else didn't at that time, and got the chance to see only because Conan implored upon Pena to give Ray a shot on the main roster. And he never looked back any place he went.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And do you know, here's a historical question. Do you know the first time Ray stepped into a WWE ring?
Oh, it was probably before he was actually in the company, but when was it?
It was in my gym in Cincinnati.
That's right. Did Heartland? He was assigned. Yes. Yes. Because when he signed the contract.
They sent Ray to me for a couple weeks. Because here's the deal, for those who don't wrestle or haven't, or even if you do and have, WWE rings are 20 by 20, and they use real rope. which has to be stretched and restretched because it, as you know, hemp will tend to, it will stretch out of shape. But anyway, the point is, and it's 2 feet bigger than the WCW, which was an 18 by 18 with cable instead of real rope. And so Ray, as a flyer, realizes, or even I'm not a flyer, but the cable, you had more spring, more elasticity off of that cable than you would off a real rope. And that 2 feet difference in a ring, believe me, makes a difference when you first get in it, because it's, wow, I'm like out in the Astrodome or something, right? And that to run that 2 extra feet or to time your spots out properly, it's awkward at first. So Ray came to Cincinnati and stayed for a couple weeks, and you know, so he'd get used to that the rope and the 20 by 20 ring. So yeah, it was our WWE ring that he first climbed in.
And most guys whose main offense comes from the air and the ropes prefer that cable that WCW used and AEW uses today, right?
Right. And those of us who have to pay for it prefer the cable, the cable too, because, yes, once I get the aircraft cable and get those ropes, it's not non-destructible, but it's going to last a long, long time. We and here's the thing, when Vince sent us the brand new WWE ring, they also sent one to Louisville. But in Louisville, that was they wanted cable. They only had the one ring. My gym was big enough that I had a WCW ring with cable and the WWE ring with rope. And but when they sent the ring to us, they sent I can't remember his name, but this he lived in, I think, Phoenix, Arizona. But he came in and showed us how to stretch the rope, how the best way to put it on to be sure that, you know, you've got to tighten it up every once in a while. And you're going to have to replace this rope every once in a while as well, which we did. We replaced it once, I think. Back then, I think of that rope for that was like close to $400. And like I say, if the cable is done right, and there's a chance you're never going to have to replace that. But yeah, it's a hell of a difference in the 2 feet difference in the size of the ring and the difference between cable and rope. And if you ever get in both rings as a wrestler, you will see the difference immediately.
As noted by Dave Meltzer, the third person is apparently Stacy Keibler, just hasn't been announced yet. Apparently that announcement will be coming this week on SmackDown or next week on Raw. I guess there's an argument to be made that she was someone who became more than just a WWE superstar, the television star on Dancing with the Stars, which is fair, but also an interesting spin from the company if that's how they present it, since it was Dancing with the Stars that convinced her to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, right. In fact, I think it was George Hamilton.
It was.
He was her dance? No, he wasn't her dance partner. He was one of the celebrity dancers too. But yeah, as I recall, it was him who when he found out the kind of money she was making, he said, "What are you doing there?" So she switched gears and changed ships and made a lot more money. God bless her.
Yeah, they were all sitting around, a bunch of the celebrities and a few of the dancers, just talking about their respective professions. And Stacy not only talked about how much she was making, but how much you spend on the road in WWE. And the stars were just aghast that you should be paying for your own transportation in any shape, form, or fashion, and the other things that most alleged independent contractors have to pay for themselves when they work for WWE. And so that was really the thing that got the ball rolling with Mr. Hamilton and a bunch of the other celebrities who encouraged Stacy to go out and find greener pastures somewhere.
You know, one of the times when I was taking one of my guys around doing dark matches when I was with WWE, I was sitting out up in the stands one afternoon watching the trainers work with Torrie Wilson and Stacy. And I thought to myself, both these beauties are, they're beautiful. They are, you know, they're in shape, they're athletic, but they're not wrestlers. And you could almost tell that they didn't want to be, you know. I mean, they were doing what they were asked to do. But I thought, why are you even trying to make, you know, they're both so good looking. They're both, you know, valets, managers, whatever. You know, there's obviously a value for them, but they, you know, wrestling wasn't it. So, and if, I always wondered too, you know, why you hire somebody, you've got a pretty good idea of what their value is going to be, but yet you're trying to make up something. It's kind of like they talk about the Army, right? You're an electrician, so they're going to make you a truck driver, or if you're a truck driver, they're going to make you something you've never done before. And I just thought, wow, you know, both these ladies have valued this company, but it won't be as wrestlers. But what the hell do I know?
Now, you know, Vince was on a 20-year kick, as it turned out at that time, about trying to eliminate the manager or the valet or what have you. There were very few exceptions, and even those had limited shelf lives. I mean, Melina ended up in the ring. I think pretty much Paul Heyman was the only guy who survived, and that was because of the particular clients he took on during his tenure, but he was only with that person. Rarely did you see him branch out. Obviously, they did it for angle reasons to great effect, moving from Brock to CM Punk when things happened there, and then taking on the Big Show in another angle with Brock Lesnar a few years ago. But, you know, he's really the only one who has stood the test of time, and there really is only one Paul Heyman. That is a fact.
That is a huge fact. You're absolutely right. And I'm anxious to see where that storyline heads tonight.
Well, I am glad you brought that up, because Kevin Owens respectfully asked everybody to stay away and then got his ass kicked on Monday. So it seems we're a step closer to seeing if that tag team match can happen with the Usos.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, again, I think it will. But I can't think of anything that has been programmed as well as that storyline in the last, whenever it started, a little over a year ago with Sammy and the whole thing, and nothing. I don't care how many blood matches or anything that they've had in AEW. None of these stories have compelled you to want to, you know, I've got to see this, or where are they going with this? And it's a shame, because they've got a hell of a depth of talent on AEW as well. But yeah, it's I'm anxious to see where it's going tonight still. And I still see quite a bit of mileage out of this, you know, whether it's KO and Sammy against the Usos or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot to build out of this still. But even if they end it at WrestleMania, realize this, the damn thing has been running almost a year and a half.
It's amazing.
And the great part about that is, I haven't seen any negatives on social media, like saying, when are they going to finish this? When are they going to get tired of this? Because it's compelling, as which every storyline should be. And in this day and age, I'm sorry to say, most are not.
That is unfortunately true. And the years where angles went 12 to 18 months, not uncommon in the days of the territories, was it? I mean, sometimes a guy would work through the ranks real quickly in his first couple of months in the territory and might only work one other main event guy for the rest of his time there.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, you're right. Well, you know, somebody was asking about this the other day, and I, as an example, I said, to tell you that we didn't rush things back then, right? When I did the big fire, getting my face burned from the Infernos back in 1967, and we were going to set up a six-man for Christmas Day in the old Charlotte Coliseum with myself, George Becker, and Johnny Weaver against the Infernos and their manager, J.C. Dykes. They burned me in September, and we took the next 2 months to build to that, well, actually closer to three. You get, you know, it wasn't right at the end of September. But anyway, it took almost 3 months for us to get to that big blow off with a six man. And it actually got us a record house for a Christmas show in that Coliseum at that, you know, up to that point. So yes, you know, and I think things are too rushed now. And I think Dave has mentioned, you know, that like with AEW, they need to hard sell their angles more, and that would bring the announcers in more, the commentators in more, like we talked about earlier, to really get into that hard sell and let them tell, you know, have some, you know, get some more verbiage about what, you know, not necessarily by calling a match, but their opinions and this and that and the other thing, and continue to talk about that and say, off and on. But yeah, it's taking your time works. It does. Believe me, I don't care if it's sports entertainment, old school, or lucha, or what it is. But if you're building a story, take your time and tell it. And I think what they've done on SmackDown with the Bloodline thing and Sammy has been extraordinarily good for this day and age.
And here's something I want to make sure we mention, because it's easy for us to talk about things having to or wanting them to take longer because of what they did when either one of us were coming up or when you were in the business as a professional wrestler. But I'll bring it right into the present day here and make the same argument a different way. Think about all the people over the last 15 or 20 years on the periphery of professional wrestling or in one of the major companies or maybe even booking one of the major companies who has told us, well, there's no way you can do that sort of thing anymore because the attention span is too short. Now we have to start angles at 8 and end them by 11 or from 8 to 10 because people just won't stand for things moving so slowly. Well, you know what? The best angle in years is the one moving just as slowly as any great angle in the territories would have. So what's your excuse now?
Yeah, right. Either you're too lazy or you don't know how, I guess. I don't know. And again, you know, I heard that Michael Hayes, you know, from the Freebirds, it was a big part of the back, you know, behind the scenes with this angle. And boys and girls, I'm sorry to tell you, that would have been old school because he worked in enough angles like that. And there's other guys there who have done the same thing. But, yeah, it's, you know, there are things that don't, you know, sometimes I think that, well, that's old school. We're not going to do it. Well, it's not, and some, like what we're talking about now is not old school. It's just good common sense. If you're hooked on, like I am, on a TV show like The Blacklist, you know, or Yellowstone, it's got nothing to do with old school. You know, those same kind of storylines hooked me on TV 30 years ago. You know, it's just good storytelling. It's just like, reading a good book or anything. So, you can have stupid discussions about it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense because there are foundation things, basics, fundamentals of making the wrestling business work that there's no reason to change or shouldn't be changed, but yet sometimes they are because somebody wants to reinvent the wheel and the wheel hasn't got flat, boys and girls. It's just got to be utilized the right way. And what we're talking about has done that.
Last item WWE related before we pivot to AEW and wrap this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. I'm looking at the picture here that accompanies the article on our site, f4wonline.com. And hindsight, obviously, 2020 with what happened with Kofi Kingston a couple of weeks back. But this picture is absolutely fantastic because you can see doom coming. You take a look at this still photo that accompanies the article that I'm about to mention to you, and you can see exactly where this was going to go wrong for poor Kofi, the way he was positioned and the way Drew McIntyre was coming down off of that dive he did that injured Kofi's ankle. And unfortunately, he had been looking to avoid surgery. It's apparently unavoidable. He's going to be going into surgery soon. That's on the front page at f4wonline.com. In fact, I believe he is having that surgery this weekend. So our best to Kofi and a speedy recovery.
Yeah. And I've worked with Kofi before he ever had his first professional match. He was just his start his training maybe 4, 5 or 6 months before, he came down to North Carolina with another group from Boston and New England to train with Ricky Steamboat, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Terry Taylor, and myself on a 3-day camp. So, yeah, he's a good guy, works his ass off. But, you know, that's the other thing, too. All these great spots that go ooh and ah and this is awesome and on and on and on. You know what? There's more guys on the shelf at one time today than I can remember in my time because, you know, you're going to hurt. I mean, you keep trying to beat the top the other guys. And I think that's part of it too. You know, it's like, okay, did you see their match? Yeah, they did. Okay, we can do something better. We do a different thing. We do that twice. I mean, I don't know the exact mindset because I don't sit down and talk to people about it. But, I mean, and that's always been the case. You're going out there to try. But, you know, back in the day, you knew if you were in the mid-card, your job wasn't to look better than try to look better than the main event. If you were in the main event, you knew what your job was, and you knew those coming after you, you know, before you, weren't out there to steal the show. And so again, you know, into building to that big main event, that was necessary. It's still necessary today if you're going to do it, to draw the crowd and feed them. You know, it comes back to like starting. I talk about starting, you know, a good match like Good Sex starts foreplay and builds the climax. So it was a good show. And there's again, it's not whether you're taking dives or doing somersaults or what you're doing. It's how you're doing it and the timing on it. And that should never change. And it does, sadly enough.
Question just popped into my head, and I promise we'll transition to AEW after this. But in talking about the style, and I'm thinking about how every generation is bigger, stronger, faster than the generation telling them they don't need to do too much. And we all think we're at a certain age, we're indestructible. And it isn't until we realize that we're not that we start warning other people who look at us the same way we looked at the last guy who told us to do that. But do you think that some of that has to do with, and again, I'm going back to the old school, but the fact that there are no longer 20-something working, thriving territories in America as opposed to a couple of major companies. You know, you just described how the main eventer was comfortable, not comfortable, that's not the right word, but knew that when he went out there, no one ahead of him was going out of their way to outdo anything he was going to do that night because we had a plan and it was executed and people were on the team. And in the days of the territories, if you wanted to move from place to place, it probably wasn't uncommon after you made some overtures to a particular territory that that promoter might call the one you're currently working for and want to know whether or not you're a team player. So it behooved you.
Of course, they would.
Yes, it behooved you to toe the line, as it were, and just make sure that everything flows because it opens more doors for you in other places. Whereas today, you know, or even a generation ago when it's just Vince, you know what? If I outdo this guy, screw him. That just means Vince will probably, or they think at least, will push me.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, to go back, the first time I ever went to the Carolinas to work for the Charlotte op, it was 1963. I broke into business in 1960. But it wasn't just, hey, my name's Les Thatcher. Here's a picture. Here's a resume. I want to come in. Well, come on. No. I sent the resume, I sent the picture, and I waited. And the Charlotte office got people, Johnny Heidemann, Sandy Scott, and Jim Grabmeier, who had all, Grabmeier and Heidemann had actually worked in the ring with me. Sandy knew me and my work from he and George being working out of the Indianapolis office when I first started there. And we got to be acquaintances and long-term friends finally. But those guys had to say, yeah, he can do the job. Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, he's not going to cause you any trouble. Before they would call and say, hey, here's a starting date. That was always the case, you know. And there's no reason it shouldn't be still, you know. Whether it is or not, I have no earthly idea. But I mean, I'm sure, you know. But the point is, if you can see a guy work today, see if, oh my God, what a great worker. But do you know anything about the guy outside the ring? Is he a troublemaker? Does he create problems? Is he a drinker? That sort of thing. And those are the things that, you know, that was asked of Sandy and Heidemann and Grabmeier, I guess. So, you know, that's important. It really is how you, and you know, real quick, we were, I know we're transitioning to, going to talk a little about AEW, and I saw where Dave had mentioned that there are guys in AEW who don't want to be there. And I don't know if he mentioned this or not, but I'm sure there are guys in Impact that don't want to be there, guys in WWE that don't want to be there, guys in Ring, I don't, you know, but you get my point. My point is sometimes you go someplace or go into someplace and think, man, this is great. And I know so-and-so, and I've worked with him, and I'm going to get a push, and the money is great. So, but the push is important too. For we all have egos. We all start in this business wanting to be world champions. At some point you figure out my niche is here. So I've got to, you know, just to be the best I can be at that level. And so, yeah. So some guys think I'm an AEW man. Everybody signed with AEW. Oh man, you can do anything. You can do anything. Wait a minute. No, This is not working out the way I thought. And the same in WWE, obviously, or any company for that matter. And what we're talking about here is certainly not new. It's been ongoing for as long as I've been in the business, and I'm sure before that, because it's human nature to a great degree as well. The grass is always greener, or you're not appreciated or whatever it is. So yeah, I'm sure that there are guys, and here's the biggest problem versus the territory days. You have signed a piece of paper or several pieces of paper that says you belong to this company for X number of months or X number of years. And now how do I get out of this? Whoa, maybe I can't. I don't know how. Whatever. But, you know, back in the territory days, you went into a territory on a handshake or a verbal agreement. And if you weren't being utilized to your full potential, or if you just thought you were being abused and not being utilized, all you had to do was pick up a telephone and start calling one of the other umpteen number of territories and saying, hey, if you're a babyface, are you looking for a babyface anywhere? Well, you know, we might be able to use one in the mid-card or whatever. And if it works, if you find somebody that's willing to take a shot, then you go in. If you're just a regular guy working that territory, you give a 2-week notice. You do jobs on your way out, and you finish up and go try it someplace else. Or if you're being used as a better than just, you know, like the preliminary matches, you can maybe give it 3 or 4 weeks. Anyway, you try to take care of your exit as much as your entrance into a territory and make it as professional as possible and move on. Can't do that today. So I'm sure there's frustrated wrestlers in every company, don't you?
Yeah, I think the bottom line here is if a wrestling journalist hears that there are some unhappy campers in a company or a specific locker room, that's a worthy story worth reporting. But as a consumer of that journalism, don't automatically assume that that locker room is a war zone, because there are always a few people who are overtly unhappy, and there are always a few who are silent and will do their job and are totally on the team, but are also plotting their exit without saying a word to you. Doesn't mean that everyone's pulling down the locker room or the company.
Sure, sure. You know, the crazy thing about our business and it being so competitive, but, you know, it's like Rodgers is going to the Jets, right?
Well, we hope.
Well, yeah, maybe. He's what he's asking for. Yeah. Well, you got to sign this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy. It's like, I thought, you've only won one Super Bowl.
Exactly.
You know, not five. Okay. So, cool down a little bit. But yeah, it's, you know, somebody in football is not happy. And they'll ask for a trade and they'll get a trade. But in wrestling, and don't ask me why it's that way, When I had a promotion and I was the boss, if you came to me and told me you weren't happy and there was no way for me, and I figure out there's no way for me to make you happy, I'm saying, what do you need to do? I need to get out. Okay. We've used you pretty well. Can we get you to look at the lights for a couple of our top guys before you go or so? But try to do it in a business-like manner, you know? And so, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And like I say, if you've signed a long-term contract, I mean, when I say long-term, if you just even 2 years, that second year could be the longest year in your life if you're not happy. So yeah, but it's going to happen. It's just human nature. I'm sure there's disc jockeys that have signed contracts in one with one company or another that wish they get the hell out of it, aren't they?
I can name you two off the top of my head right now.
A Yeah, I mean, it's, again, everybody, how many, you go to any, I can go down here to Weigel's convenience store, and I bet there's somebody in there that wish they were working someplace else, right?
Of course. That's always the
human
way.
Human nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, of course, if it's not, but in wrestling, and we talk about wrestling and all, you know, the sites that people work with or go to are wrestling, so it's news. But I wouldn't panic about it if I were in, you know, and although, you know, if that's developing behind the scenes someplace, we'll find that out sooner or later, too.
We most certainly will. By the way, let's just quickly pivot to Dynamite here. And I mentioned this at the start of the show, Les. You know, we've been talking quite a bit about their ratings and worrisome numbers and what have you. And I would not be pleased, despite the intense sports competition this past week, with that 852,000 they did. But it is worth noting that I believe that they're called in the TV business those plus seven numbers with respect to how many people DVR the show and then watch it back within the next 7 days. So to be fair to AEW on this, I mean, rarely once you put those numbers in are they doing less than 950. And many weeks they are over 1 million by the time the week is done. So it's not exactly doom and gloom. And you understand why the folks at Warner Brothers Discovery appear at least to be very optimistic about this partnership, which actually, now that I think about it, is worth mentioning since the news did come out at some point in this week. In addition to that quote-unquote reality show that they're doing with AEW, AEW announced a third professional wrestling television show that could be coming to TBS on Saturday nights at 6:05. There's a lot of details still left to be filled out, but we're going to get another hour of TV, it looks like, sooner rather than later.
I think your Booker, three-time Booker of the Year, is stretching himself way too thin.
Well, I told you my theory on this. This is by direct order of Dad, because he's like, look, you're spending all my money on half these people who I've never seen before. Can you at least put them to work? Can we get them on television?
Yeah, that's a good possibility as well. Dad said, you might as well, you're going to get a big chunk of my money when I'm gone. You might as well get some of it now, but he didn't say that much. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's more than I expected, damn it. But yeah. Yeah, it's he's stretching himself pretty damn thin, and he's got some good people there, but he can't be everywhere at once. I don't care. I mean, this trying to book four wrestling shows, even with help. I mean, if you're the finals, I mean, this is not like, okay, I've got one flower shop. Now I'm going to open a second and a third and a fourth. Okay, we're going to have people managing those other flower shops, so I don't have to be on top of them all the time. But if you're going to be the creative mastermind of this whole thing, you better be on top of all four of these shows most of the time, or you're going to get probably won't get a lot of sleep either, for sure. But I'd be curious to see what that hour is going to be. And no, I don't think at 6:05 on Saturday night, anyone will mistake it for WCW.
I completely agree with that.
Or Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Yeah. But can we get the second show on track? Which reminds me, before we get to some other stuff in AEW, if you have the opportunity to listen to this not too long after it makes the front page of the website, and you're still listening on Friday before Rampage, and if you're listening on Friday, there's a pretty good chance you're listening before Rampage, because it's being... It won't air until after the last NCAA men's college basketball tournament game on TNT tonight. So 11:30 at the absolute earliest for Rampage this week. And if games run long and coverage runs long, then Rampage will air whenever that coverage comes to an end. Having said that, particularly if you're out enjoying St. Patrick's Day just a little too much, I don't think you need to worry about staying up late to watch this particular professional wrestling program. So far, we've got what we know, spoiler-free, is the in-ring debut of Taya Valkyrie, which, by the way, I would argue, regardless of what you think of Taya, and I want your thoughts on her entering the company here in just a second, Les. I'm not sure if I wanted to push her as a big-name acquisition in the women's division that I'd put her in her first match on Rampage, but I digress. We've also got the Jericho Appreciation Society, and the two, I guess, name matches for the night, Daniel Garcia versus Brody King, and Powerhouse Hobbs defending the TNT Championship against Rey Fénix. So that is your lineup for Rampage. St. Patrick's Day Slam late tonight, Mr. Thatcher. Talk to me about Taya Valkyrie.
Well, you know what? I realize she's going to hook up with their their female Goldberg, right?
Yes.
talent-wise, they're about the same, about that same level too, I think. Let's face it, Jade is not a polished worker. I mean, she's a beautiful woman, great shape. She's not a polished wrestler. Not saying she won't be or can't be, but she is not at this point in time. And with Valkyrie, and we talked about it on here, when she was with NXT, her work was, for lack of a better expression, sort of herky-jerky. Mm-hmm. She wasn't fluid. It wasn't smooth. And as a dancer, I don't find her to be the most entertaining dancer in the world either. But anyway, that was from Wednesday night. I've never seen her dance anywhere else. But yeah, so I'm not real sure how she's going to enhance the women's division of AEW. No more than I've already figured. Well, I shouldn't say that. Saraya, I don't know what kind of money she's making, but I haven't seen her really what I think earn that money and needs more at this point. Have you?
I have not, but I'm sure you are thrilled that Riho has returned.
About as thrilled as if I had the measles again.
That did not get you out of your chair on Wednesday?
Well, no, she didn't get me out of my chair, or I didn't get excited. When she beat Nyla Rose, yeah, I thought, wow, she is Superwoman, isn't she? And the fact that Nyla Rose has never beat her, I don't know if that means that they don't like Nyla Rose in AEW or what.
You know what? Low key, like quiet as it's kept, that's one of the great booking missteps in this company. I'm not saying Nyla Rose is guaranteed box office or anything, but when you have someone who is that much bigger than everybody else in the division, there's a way to present that person, and they haven't done that at all.
No, they haven't. No, they have not. And now with Valkyrie, the one thing that stood out is that she's eye to eye with Jade, mm-hmm. and most of those girls aren't. And she's actually outweighs Jade by a pound or two. We don't talk about women's weight, right?
Not if you know what's good for you. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so you would think this, but I just, who's going to lead this match is my point. Because like I say, now I can't say that Valkyrie, when she was in NXT, maybe she was injured, maybe she had, you know, some sort of thing that she couldn't go or couldn't, you know, be as fluid as you would expect her to be. She's not a new person in this business. I don't know sure how many years she's been around, but it's not like she just started a couple years ago. And her husband should have been able to teach her something, don't you think?
I agree with that. But, you know, sometimes people just aren't great fits for whatever reason. It just doesn't, the mix isn't right. I mean, I really enjoyed Taya Valkyrie every place else she'd been and had high expectations in NXT. But, you know, sometimes things just aren't meant to work out. They don't click. And she definitely didn't click there. I agree with you that everything seemed kind of stilted with her there. But you also have to keep in mind sometimes, I shouldn't even say sometimes, I think it was an overt directive for many years, and I don't know if that's still the case in NXT. But for many years, the whole directive at the Performance Center was, okay, you've learned all of this, and that's great. But now you're here, and it's time for you to unlearn all of that and learn everything that we want. You know, just completely empty your head about everything you've ever done. And that could cause someone to be kind of stilted and herky jerky in motion because now you've got them thinking too much.
Yes, you're right. I won't disagree at all. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That could be the case. But I think this lineup for Rampage, I don't think it took Darby. Oh, I saw an old poster from Darby Gill and the Little People.
Oh,
yes, on Twitter this morning. Yes, absolutely. For those who don't know, Darby first came on the scene, I called him Darby O'Gill with the Little People. And Vic didn't know what the hell is he talking about, but he wouldn't say so. And then he happened to catch, the movie on late TV or something?
Oh, yeah, flipping channels late one night. It was actually on TV.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I was talking about, Darby O'Gill and Little People. And, of course, today being Shamrock Day, you know, for the rest of us Irish, it's Faith in Me Golly. It isn't for sure the day of the Irish, but yeah, happy St. Patrick's to everybody as well. But yeah, so that's the deal. And but I don't think that those four guys would have been my pick to go out there and think, I want to kick your ass. Because none of them are as big as he was to start with, and that's not to detract from their talent or saying they're not talented. I'm just saying they didn't fit that mold for me at this point, but then they did go out there, and it was a long segment. It was, I don't know what it accomplished, to be quite frank with you, except it got MJF's face in the cake, but damn it, MJF, you couldn't even keep the cake on your face.
I'm sure Cornette was. This is the first thing Cornette will actually give Max a failing grade on.
Right. I don't disagree with that. But anyway, you know, Dave seemed to think that them mentioning, and I guess maybe a wrestler mentioning it might be detrimental to a certain degree. You know, Darby had mentioned, you know, you don't even come and wrestle on Rampage. And Dave was afraid that that might make Rampage look like a second banana or B show.
Well, it is.
It is the B show. Yeah. If you watched it on Friday night,
but you know what?
There can't be any doubt in your mind.
But let me ask you, if you were booking, would you have him say that?
I don't think it's necessary to say it. No.
I agree.
But I don't think it was like a shock to anybody either, you know? Yeah, again, I think there are oftentimes that a lot of things don't need to be said, but for some reason they're said anyway. But yeah, they could have lived without that. Absolutely. But like I say, it is the B show. I don't know what that third 1 hour is going to be. Do you?
I'm a little concerned, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Really concerned.
I would be. Yeah. Yeah. It could be bad, but yeah, I don't see this being a standout show, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, it remains to be seen. I guess we'll all find out. But again, it's in a disadvantageous spot because it's out of its normal time slot, and who knows how long that last tournament game of the night will last. So I wouldn't do any cartwheels or with expectation for the number, and won't necessarily blame this lineup when the number comes in if it's below par.
Right.
Now, I did offer the caveat of, you know, keep in mind that their DVR numbers are very solid. So maybe this number isn't something that we should be spending an inordinate amount of time on. But 852's got to be a disappointment. But 852's a disappointment for the way they put that show together and wanted to make a big impression in Canada. And certainly the crowd in the building was thrilled.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem that translated towards the viewing audience.
No, it didn't seem to do that. Not at all. And you know, about the numbers on Wednesday night, I thought, you know, I didn't know. I told you before we started recording, I said I didn't really know how. There was a lot of content. I mean, six mans and eight mans and nine man. No, not. But, you know, just there were thousands of bodies in and out of the ring all night. But I just wasn't sure, what did I see? Nothing really jumped off the page. And I thought this was great, or this has moved a storyline along. It was just all there, you know, so apparently some other people might have thought that as well. I don't know. But yeah, tonight I've got my DVR set for 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. Whether that's too early or not, I don't know.
Well, you know,
we shall see.
If your DVR cuts on at 11:30 and Kenny and Charles Barkley are cutting promos on each other, that's not a bad thing to record.
No, it's not. Charles Barkley is very entertaining.
Yes.
And it was a hell of a basketball player in his day as well. But yeah, so yeah, we'll see what this. Of course, now, obviously, the time is going to throw some people off. You know, I've told you this story before, but I know we got some listeners that haven't been with us forever and ever. One of the crazy things back in the day of the old school is, you know, like sometimes you might move to a bigger venue in a in a town that you ran every week. I can use, for example, Columbia, South Carolina. We were in Township Auditorium every Tuesday night. A couple times we moved to South Carolina University's field house. In fact, there is a picture up on Twitter. I don't know who put it up. Mike Mooneyham has clicked it. A couple people. Or is it on Facebook? Anyway, of Jack and Jerry Briscoe and myself sitting at an autograph table signing autographs, and that is in University of South Carolina's field house or stadium or Coliseum or whatever the hell they called it at the time. So sometimes you move to a bigger venue because you've got a bigger card. But my point is, it never fails to happen that when you go back, like in Columbia, to Township Auditorium the following Tuesday night, if somebody said, where were you guys last week? We were over at the University. Well, I didn't know that. And the crazy thing is that your ring announcer the week before you went to the university's building made an announcement several times throughout the night at Township Auditorium. Sometimes people just don't, you know, they miss something or they're just not paying attention at that particular time when it's being pushed. So, yes, tonight, whatever time they come on, unless you've got a VCR set that is flexible without you touching it, you may miss it, or their ratings may even be lower than they are normally, but then that's to be figured with that kind of time slot, too.
Agreed. One last item of business here, and we'll call it a day, because I think it's one of the things that's going to be a really important point in this company moving forward as far as their television product is concerned, and that's where Adam Page is headed. You and I were wondering why Jon Moxley was still picking fights with this guy in the last couple of weeks after that Texas death match at the pay-per-view, and we exchanged a couple of theories here off the air, so we might as well mention them on the air, and I'll ask you what you thought of the way they did it and what you think is happening moving forward. The possibility exists now that there's going to be some sort of story that moves Paige back into the fold with the Elite, and then it's the Elite versus the Blackpool Combat Club, or Moxley was starting trouble with him merely as a plot device, you know, for Tony Khan to shift Adam Page back towards something that's going to be long-lasting with the Elite, and maybe after this week the Combat Club moves on to something else because the mission was accomplished in terms of having the show ending with Page and the Elite having his back.
You know, that's as good a theory as any, I think. I won't even try to one-up you or even one below you for that matter. I think it probably makes the most sense from what we saw. but you know what? I always looked at, and you know I'm a Page fan, for those fans who don't know, I booked him in 2012-13 in a tournament I ran in Los Angeles because I'd only seen him do a job once on Ring of Honor TV, but I saw a lot of potential in him. And I think that in essence, I never thought that he really fit with the Elite. I thought he was more like the round peg in a square hole sort of thing. You know, I mean, he was as braggadocious or as flamboyant or as this, he was just kind of there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was glad to see him, break off from them. And so maybe that is what he's going to do, go back. I don't know that I think that's going to, well, with some fans, it will make him God, I know, because he's with the Jacksons. But I don't know if that's a reason or not. Like I said to you, usually a real Texas death match and even fake Texas death matches, I'm figuring should be the end of a program, the end of a storyline, the end of an angle. And apparently right here they bring him and Mox right back in the sixth man. And maybe it's the only reason for it is to set him up with the Elite. That could very well be it. And they could be taken off with that. But, of course, that means he turns his back on Uno and his crew, who has been supportive of for God knows a couple years, right?
Yes.
Almost from the beginning. And, I don't know. But if I'm trying to figure out how Tony Khan books, I'll drive myself nuts.
Well, I'll throw out a fantasy booking theory that we can end the show with. Let's presume this works on the assumption that the Combat Club was simply there to get Paige to the Elite and that the Combat Club is moving on to something else. And I'm only surmising that because it looks like the Trios Championship field is pretty crowded since there were plenty of teams in that main event match on Wednesday. What if the idea was to move Paige back to the Elite, the Combat Club moves on to something else, and the idea is that Adam Cole's going to be back here in a couple of weeks. Maybe Adam Cole comes back and says, I got hurt, and you assholes cast me aside. Now he's your fair-haired boy again. What the hell's going on?
Oh, that's it. You know what? Yeah, he's got to have something to do when he comes back, right?
Yeah, especially if Paige, with a win like he had over Moxley, is not getting a championship match. So what are you going to do? Well, if you add him back to the Elite and have Adam Cole have issue with this, then you've got something important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, that would work. Yes, I'm glad to see Adam come back, too. Hope his health is good and he's feeling healthy and ready to roll. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It does. And of course, and then there could be something off the wall that none of us have figured.
True.
And that's a possibility because I see that quite often as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be the most likely option.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, he needs to zero in. When I say he, I mean Tony Khan, I think he needs to zero in on maybe two or three storylines that are paramount to his company and get razor sharp on those and let everybody else just be fillers and quit running 7,000 people through that turnstile. I mean, I'm talking about the wrestlers. I'm not talking about the fans. Stop all the run-ins, for God's sakes, because they mean nothing now, except that somebody doesn't get beat and somebody else gets disqualified or something. If you aren't talented enough to look at the lights, and I give you Bryan Danielson and Chris Jericho as two examples of how to look at the lights and live to tell about it and still, you know, have the fans behind you, then you need to be the other end of the spectrum, and that's the guy who's doing the job or lower down the card. I mean, everything can't be a throwout or disqualification or a run. I'm not. But now I thought the other thing, Wednesday, I had forgot about them being in Winnipeg. I knew Chris from there, right? But I forgot about
Omega, yeah.
Omega, yeah. To me, again, and my friend who says I can't say this isn't wrestling, so I won't. If you wanted those two guys to say, like, have the Battle of Winnipeg for who is the man, who is the Winnipeg god or king or whatever, put them in a singles match. But don't have everybody else get down the floor and sit and watch like they're gaga. You're at the same level as these guys, or at least near there, you know? Or you should act like it if you're not. I mean, it's great for them, you know, I knew what you were trying to. But am I making sense? I mean, for the other guys in this match, just to get out and sit and watch made, what the excuse my French. What the hell about that? I mean,
they literally put themselves on the wrong side of the guardrail.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't be awed.
Yes,
by seeing these two guys. You know, you're supposed to be walking side by side with them, not holding your pencil and paper out and asking for an autograph.
You can be just as interested in seeing this confrontation as anyone else from the apron.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Again, I'm not running the show, so what the hell do I know?
Well, I happen to think you know quite a lot.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Will you pay me for what I know? Well, that's the next question.
I'm sorry. I think I hear my mother's on the other line. I think I've got to go.
All right, Vic. It's nice talking to you.
But you know what? Maybe some other folks can put a few dollars in your pocket. After all, it's about that time to let everybody know where they get a hold of you for bookings, just like so many people who ended up in WWE and Impact and in AEW who were training at the Monster Factory that had the opportunity to benefit from your camps there, as well as those T-shirts and DVDs?
Well, if you'd like to have me for a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp, simply email me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Be more than happy to send you out that information of cost and what I do and all the important stuff. I'd be more than happy to get back to you and love doing these things. So let's get together. We're talking about pro wrestling tees. If you'd be interested in a copy of the first ever pro wrestling t-shirt on the market put out in 1972, it is the Briscoe Booster shirt. Designed and put out by Jack and Jerry Briscoe and myself, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler, and you, as I said, you can get that at Pro Wrestling Tees. And as far as DVDs, Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content each, and both are two DVD sets. Joe Dombrowski tells me he will have Volume 3 out around WrestleMania time, so we'll look for that as well. And on these DVDs, matches, interviews, extras, Joe and I do the voiceover. Joe does more of the play-by-play, and I talk about the behind-the-scenes and about some of the inside stuff with the talent that you're watching. And you can get these DVDs at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And, of course, the one that we're both, Joe and I are both extremely proud of, Brian Pillman Show's Anthology, the 20th anniversary, a 4-DVD set, 15 hours of content, all four of those great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, footage from the auction where we raffled off J.R. Stetson and D'Lo's chest protector, among other things, awards and extras running out your ears, and those are available. The Pillman Anthology is available at PillmanShows.com, or the two addresses I mentioned earlier, Joe-Dombrowski.com and ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And it is St. Paddy's Day, so once again, if you're Irish or if you're not, you should be. Aaron Gobrah, happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you, and be safe if you're out there traveling.
Yes, enjoy your green beer if you're of age, and go back to crying in that green beer about your brackets.
There you go.
For the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend schedule to spend some of it here with us. We will talk to you again next week, but it sounded like you had one last thought. What was it?
I was going to say, I was looking for a St. Patrick's Day t-shirt that I would like, something that I would wear more than just one time. And then I couldn't find the size, you know, a 2X. So today I wore my Boston Celtics green baseball cap with the shamrock on it. But that was my...
Yeah, anything Celtics qualifies.
You're damn right.
We're done here for the week. We'll get back with you again next Friday.